On July 11th, 2021, a loud call for freedom was heard on the streets of communist-ruled Cuba. Fed up with 62 years of nada, nothing, but Castro communism, oppression, and scarcity, what does the future hold for the people long robbed of any opportunities? How did we get here? What we learned? And can we finally be free? SOS Cuba is a weekly six-episode series hosted by me, Enrique Santos, and Telemundo and NBC journalist José Díaz-Balart. We invite you to join us, our guests, social influencers, artists, and journalists from the island, as well as the global exile community, as we dive deep into the history that shaped us and talk patria, vida, libertad, and human rights in Cuba. José, I think we should talk to Rosa María Payá. And for those that don't know Rosa María Payá, you should know Rosa María Payá. She's a human rights activist. She's fighting for freedom in Cuba. She's daughter of activist Osvaldo Payá, head of the Christian Liberation Movement, who was killed in 2012. She has continued his work and addresses the United Nations in the past to criticize the Cuban government's refusal to allow a referendum or vote for basic freedoms. She's recently met with members of the Biden administration. I've been there in that room. You've addressed also the Congress. Your work is nonstop, Rosa María. Thank you. Nonstop for liberty of the Cuban people. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be with you, Enrique, José. Thanks for inviting me.
Let's give a little bit of context quickly so everyone who's meeting you for the first time knows of your father's work. Your father headed the Varela Project. Could you explain what the Varela Project was?
Yes, my father was one of the leaders of the opposition, and the Varela Project was so far probably the most massive initiative of law that the Cuban people have tried during these 62 years of dictatorship. It was an intent for using the rules of the system, change the system to guarantee human rights. The leaders of the Varela Project gathered tens of thousands of signatures. The Constitution asked for 10,000 for the project of law to be discussed and for the government to have to answer to that initiative of law. More than 35,000 of signatures were delivered. Tens of thousands of Cubans there to write their name, address, ID numbers to tell the Cuban regime, hey, we want this change. We want freedom of expression, freedom of association, free elections. And we want you to ask the rest of the Cuban people in a referendum to change that system towards that recognition of basic human rights. The reaction of the regime was violate their own law to make that constitution and the system, the communist system that constitution established, to make it irrevocable, to make it unchangeable, basically to make it eternal, like a life sentence to communism for the whole Cuban population. And he and the regime also started a very aggressive repression wave that put in jail many of the leaders of the Varela Project in a stage that is now known as the Black Spring. It was in March. More than 50 of the leaders of the Varela Project went to jail in the cause of the 75 political prisoners were put in jail in that moment, and they went in jail. They spent almost 10 years in jail, while the opposition, my father, other leaders, other people continue working till 2012, when my father and Harold were killed.
Rosa María, your organization, Cuba Decide, Cuba Decides, has been working and works continuously to help Cubans be able to decide their future, right? What does Cuba's future look like? What does Cuba need to be able to get to a time and a place where Cuba's people will be able to truly decide their future?
Only freedom. Only freedom. And of course, that's the simple answers. And it's at the same time the root of the problem, and it's what the Cuban people was demanding and is demanding. Yet they are still demanding freedom in the streets, in the ways that they can, because the repression and the militarization of the country is almost millimetric. But there are some conditions that have to be fulfilled in order to be able of actually enjoying or provoking that transition process that the Cuban people is demanding. And that starts by the recognition of the human rights. That starts for the opening to the Cuban citizenry for them to be able to actually have a say in the destiny of the country and in their own destinies. And since Cuba Decide, we saw it and we propose a path that goes by the same line that my father and the Varela Project opened, which is the line of not of using anymore the system, because the system is closed to any kind of initiative that tries actually to change it, but to use common sense, to use international law, to use the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and to have a free vote in Cuba to be able to change that system and start a transition process. Of course, a free vote in Cuba includes conditions that need to be demanded by the Cuban people, as they are doing, but also by the international community. Because, Enrique, at the end of the day, there are several tools that we could use. The one that we are imposing is a free vote, a plebiscite in the island with very strict preconditions that make it actually a tool to change the system. But no matter the tool, at the end of the day, we need to generate the pressure over the regime for them to have to submit to the will of the people and leave. And that requires what the Cuban people is already doing, which is the mobilizations in the streets, the nonviolent movement of a whole population demanding freedom, but that also require very specific, concrete actions from the international community in support of that people that is peaceful, that is unarmed, that is demanding a change against an state that is ready to use their weapons against their almost naked bodies.
Rosa Maria, in history, and I want your thoughts on it, in history, movements for liberation often don't end well, and I'm thinking of 1956 in Hungary. I'm thinking in 1968 in the Czechoslovakia. I'm thinking even of the movements of the Arab Spring and how people can take to the streets, but in the final days, the tanks prevail. How is it that in Cuba there can be a movement or a process that doesn't end like 1956 Hungary, and doesn't end like 1968 Czechoslovakia, and doesn't end like so many processes where the people are willing to die for something and the government in power accepts and indeed takes their life?
Very good question, Jose, because we have that experience, well, from Tiananmen to Caracas. People taking the streets, demanding freedom, and being crushed by the regimes that are ready to kill, as the Cuban regime is ready and has been doing during these dates since July 11. I think that nobody here believes in the goodwill of that criminal dictatorship. That the single language that dictatorship understands is the language of the force, the language of the power. And I'm not saying, I'm not talking about a military invasion. I'm talking about being ready to generate the pressure over the interests of those criminals that are in power, that has they have names, they have bank accounts in Swiss, they have a life of luxury that the international community could target. Because we are not anymore talking about Fidel Castro and that whole generation of generals that even in their even when they were very sadic criminals, they still enjoy some, in my opinion, hypocritical support for many in the international community. Right now, we are talking about mainly about the sons and the grandsons of that generation that is inheriting power, that is as criminal as the previous generation, as corrupt as the previous generation, but is much more vulnerable, is still less legitimate, and they are just trying to keep power, to try also to keep their resources and their money that actually belong to the Cuban people. So I do believe that the international community has a leverage in support of that people in the streets that is demanding change. And the other face of this coin is that if you realize of that opportunity that the international community has, an opportunity provided by the Cuban people that is ready to put their bodies in the streets, then you also realize that you could target the head of the octopus of the democratic instability in the continent. You target the Castro's regime, and you have a much better possibility to success with the Venezuelan regime, with the Ortega regime. You have a much greater possibility to actually support Latin America in order to make a more peaceful, more secure, more stable continent. Right now, we have that opportunity. And that's something that we are trying to repeat and to explain to the democracies of Latin America, but also to United States. The victory of the democracy in Cuba is the most important victory of the first half of the 21st century, and it's something doable now.
And Rosa Maria, I want to ask you a question that you were asked when you appeared on Capitol Hill. And I also want to ask you in the same question, talk about the importance of the internet for Cuba and Cubans. But the question you were asked when you appeared on Capitol Hill was, why, if you do something over and over again and it has no results, to continue doing it is an errand of fools. Why should the United States continue its policy vis-a-vis the Castro government when, you were asked, that is really a continuation of repetitive mistakes?
Yes, of course, but we are not asking for a continuation of the same policy. We are asking for a much more active role in the international community and towards Cuba, with very fresh approach as the one that is inviting the administration to use all the resources in their power to provide internet access to the Cuban people. We are calling the administration to be a leader of the democratic world in the direction of supporting the Cuban people to recover their sovereignty. And that starts by denouncing the legitimacy of the Cuban regime that have never had the consent of the people, but that lost the last ounce of legitimacy that they had in the moment that they decided to shut down young Cubans in the streets. We are asking for the American administration and the rest of the world, Europe, Latin America, Asia, to take an approach similar to the one that they took with South Africa to end the apartheid, to target those enterprises, those companies that are still in Cuba, that are still enriching the dictatorship over the human rights of the Cuban people, and invite them to embrace the Sullivan principle and start to exercise respect for human rights even in the middle of that situation. We are actually telling United States of the America, hey, you now, you have an opportunity to exercise hemispheric leadership for peace. That is a new approach. We are not talking about just keeping the status quo that obviously haven't been enough to support the Cuban people demand for change. What we are asking for is a much more active position that complements what the Cuban people is already doing. And to be honest, those actions haven't been taken yet. We have had some steps from the administration in the direction of targeted sanctions against individuals that are guilty of repression. That's good, but those targeted sanctions have to be extended to the family members that are part of the corruption network. Have to be also applied by the Inter-American system, by the European Union, and we need steps towards connecting the Cuban people towards allowing to providing some kind of internet access without interference of the Cuban people. We need a world reaction, and that hasn't happened yet. So the same thing that I said to Representative Vargas, we are talking about very new concrete things that I do believe that is a fresh approach that haven't happened yet. Let's do it, and then we could have the same discussion. I'm sure that we're going to have it in a whole new scenery.
Rosa Maria, what would you tell people that see Cuba as a sexy place of awesome hotels and happy people? People that have, I would say, a distorted view or reality of Cuba, what would you like to tell them? Or if there was any misconception that you would like to clarify for those who think that Cuba's okay, or, you know, that people such as yourself and us, that we're just wasting our time talking.
Or the tourists that go to Cuba.
That only see the beautiful things.
And say, gosh, the people are really happy. It's a poor country, but boy, there's a lot of rhythm, there's a lot of color, and nobody told me anything distraught about the system.
Yeah, well, I would ask them if they are ready to go to live there, not as a tourist, just go to live there as a Cuban. I'm a fan of freedom. I mean, I don't tell anybody don't go. I tell everybody just do whatever you want, but please don't do it assuming or claiming that your actions support in any way the Cuban people. They are very, in my opinion, racist positions, talking about, well, we wouldn't accept that in our democratic countries, but for Cubans, well, that's okay, they are happy there. Well, no, just guess what? We are as human as anyone in this planet, and we also want the same rights and the same freedom that you enjoy. So if that freedom takes you to my island, that's fine, but please notice that the Cuban people just want to have the same opportunities and the same rights. Do not assume that we are less humans and less concerned about life and pursuit of happiness than you are.
Rosa Maria, thank you for your time, and thank you for your tireless work for the liberty de la gente de Cuba. Libertad. Muchas gracias, Rosa Maria.
Muchas gracias, José. Muchas gracias, Enrique.
Hay algo que se puede hacer para unir el exilio cubano, porque hay tanta división, hay que mencionarlo. La división viene de generaciones, los de allá, los de acá, que si piensas de una manera, si eres de
Bueno, todo lo que pasa, te voy a decir, lo que pasa es una confusión entre republicano y demócrata. Por eso yo soy independiente. Aquí no puede haber política, aquí somos cubano-americanos.
Yo también soy independiente.
Y te digo una cosa, mientras uno piense tu sangre, seas un, como yo dije al presidente, igual que Pitbull, que también es un gran muchacho, ha hecho un trabajo increíble. Ustedes mismos, muchos que han nacido aquí. Lo bonito de esto, tú sabes qué, que no dejamos nunca de pensar en nuestro país. También respetamos este gran país, que es un gran país que nos ha dado oportunidad y que tenemos que devolver lo que nos ha dado a nosotros. Mientras esa línea nunca se pase, lo más importante, tú sabes, es que no piensen esto no es política. Todos los presidentes, yo he apoyado a todos los presidentes, republicanos y demócratas, yo no creo en partidos por eso, porque por un presidente te diga que es algo, no tienes que hacerlo. Él puede tener una opinión, pero no tienes que hacerlo. Yo a veces yo he estado en el Force One con el presidente Bush y le he dicho cosas que me dice, no, yo no pienso. Digo, señor presidente, usted me preguntó a mí, igual que he estado con otros presidentes. Pero al final, el mensaje tiene que haber unidad, no tiene que haber cosas políticas. En este momento tenemos que empezar, más que todo, como americanos, defender. Vienen momentos muy difíciles con esta pandemia. Económicamente el país, yo sí lo veo muy difícil lo que se enfrenta en este país. Hay que pensar, más que todo, como no como un político, sino como americano.
Oye, Emilio, a veces estas cosas, perdón que haga unas preguntas que no necesariamente, pero José Ortega y Gasset hablaba de que el hombre es el hombre más sus circunstancias. Tú hablas de que has tenido que vivir, en efecto, 2 o 3 vidas, como mucho del exilio cubano. Pero el cubano también, el que está en la isla, le ha tocado vivir con unas circunstancias tan dolorosas, tan frustrantes. Y yo me pregunto, Emilio, el hombre que es el hombre más sus circunstancias, ¿tú crees que ese pueblo pueda lograr próximamente su libertad cuando tiene tantas frustraciones, obstáculos y peligros?
Yo creo que sí. Este es el momento que hemos estado esperando. A ellos salir a la calle, lo que hay que convencer, la parte militar tiene que tener el apoyo de la parte militar. ¿Cómo se hace esto? Es con la internet, la promoción mundialmente y seguir nosotros hablando del dolor de nuestro país. Date cuenta, cualquier persona tiene 62 años y nació en esa época, casi ha perdido una vida completa en ese país. O sea, manejado solamente por una persona con un ideal. Y ha sido porque no salían las imágenes que han salido últimamente, porque ya tenemos esa suerte de tener el internet. Pero si yo creo que tú sabes que este momento es un momento histórico, porque hay que tener mucho. Mira, hablar aquí en Miami es muy fácil. Hablar en Cuba, decir algo como el coraje que han tenido. Yo le tengo mucha admiración al pueblo de Cuba. Tengo mucha admiración a los cubanos de aquí en Miami, porque de verdad seguimos luchando. Es increíblemente. Y el legado que yo te digo, en cierta forma, que puede surgir, es dejar una conciencia que cuando pase mucho tiempo, la gente nunca se olvide lo que pasó en nuestro país. Que sea un ejemplo a lo que es la libertad, lo que es el luchar. Todavía nosotros, cuando vino COVID, yo tuve que cerrar algunos restaurantes y me deprimí tanto porque una persona no puede hacerlo solo. Hay mucha gente que te ayuda. Tener que dejar de cerrar un restaurante, gente que estaba 30 años, 40 años con nosotros, fue muy difícil. Pero yo sí pienso, y mi vida el secreto ha sido con la de la siguiente gloria. Cuando viene un momento difícil, cuando más enfocado tiene uno, tiene que estar, y más que todo, más positivo tiene en la vida. Yo creo en Cuba, creo en el exilio cubano y creo que la libertad siempre va a ganar lo que es el comunismo. Esto fue una transición muy dolorosa para Cuba y para muchos países, pero la libertad tiene que lograr no solamente en Cuba, en el mundo entero, porque es lo máximo que puede tener un ser humano.
Emilio, gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Sí, felicidades. Me hicieron hablar inglés.
Sí.
Y lo hablaste muy bien.
Lo hablaste a la perfección. Es un acento británico.
No, dice que es sexy. Dice que el acento mío es sexy, pero es que nadie me entiende.
Ahora el reto. Que nos cantes.
No, eso sí, olvídate.
Oye, Andy, is there, when you have a reality of 63 plus years of indoctrination, of totalitarianism, of destruction, of isolation, of darkness and no light, how do you see the possibilities of a future? In other words, how does Cuba, in your crystal ball, how does Cuba evolve from darkness into light? How does Cuba and Cubans evolve out of the totalitarian system into a place where they can be in charge of their own future and their own destiny?
Well, obviously the regime has to end, right? And that system of government has to change, and there has to be an open political society with multiple parties and elect true elections and with the desire of having, you know, a free and pluralistic democratic society. That's what we all strive for. It's going to be difficult, obviously, because the infrastructure of that country is completely in shambles. So there has to be an influx of monies, unless you take all the money that Castro's have in Switzerland, that might be able to rebuild the country. But you take that has to come from somewhere. You know, so we have to, as a society, we have to embrace who's going to be able to come and help to rebuild the country. you know, from the sewage to electricity to communication, to all that stuff has to be, you know, healthcare, hospitals. I mean, all that stuff has to be reworked. And we, as an exile community, obviously have become, through hard work over the years, a very powerful financial community. And I know there's a lot of people willing to help with no strings attached, but it's going to take even more than that. It's going to take countries' helps, you know, and the international banks to provide long-term, you know, very long-term loans to be able to, the country to borrow and build, you know. But the leadership is important, you know, who's leading this new wave, you know, and theory for me, I think the new Cuba needs a mother. It needs a mother's touch, and it needs a woman in charge. You know, we have to get away from the sort of the conceit of the, you know, the sort of the cliche of the machismo leader, you know, cult leader. What we need is a motherly figure who has a deep sensitivity, has grown up there, understands the situation that the Cuban people have been feeling through, and, you know, have been dealing with through all these years. But I just feel it needs a woman to lead us into the new era. That's just my sense.
And Lord knows that, man, there's been so many women, so many mothers that have been there banging on the doors of Cuban jails, demanding that their kids and their husbands be released peacefully, right? Please let our husbands and our children go, and that they've been so violently attacked for peacefully. They dress in white, la dama de blanco, dress in white and take the streets to Cuba just asking for their loved ones to be released. And they're dragged by the hair, and they're beaten with batons. It's really absurd.
They're going to church. They start at church, and then they proceed in the procession, and then they get beat up. But nobody reports that. You know, you guys get a lot of news in Florida, in South Florida, and Miami. It's what's happening in Cuba is in the news there all the time, because obviously there's a big community that is always constantly in need of what's, you know, knowing what's going on. But I live in Los Angeles, so we don't get anything like that. It doesn't exist here.
Well, that's why we're doing this podcast.
Do you have hope, Andy?
Yes, I live eternally with hope, because as Robert Browning said, a man's reach should be greater than his grasp of what's a heaven for.
Andy, thank you for your time. Thank you for everything you do for our cultura, por la gente de Cuba, por la libertad del pueblo cubano. Muchas gracias, hermano. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Always
a
pleasure.
¡Viva! 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 ¡Abajo la dictadura! ¡Abajo Castro!
¿Qué esperanzas tienes tú cuando tú ves el futuro de Cuba? ¿Cómo lo ves?
Tengo mucha esperanza porque casualmente todo lo que has dicho no ocurrió el 11 de julio. ¿Entiendes? Todo lo que has dicho no ocurrió el 11 de julio. No se tiraron al mar. Ellos no querían irse de Cuba. Ellos querían libertad. O sea, ahí yo encontré la esperanza. Cuando vi un pueblo que dijo, esto no es el maleconazo, que todos se fueron con balsa. No, dijeron, no, nosotros no queremos irnos. Solo queremos que se vayan ustedes. Aquí ustedes son los que sobran, no somos nosotros. Entonces ahí yo entendí que realmente hay esperanza, porque la esperanza se crea con la juventud. O sea, ahí en esa juventud que yo vi el 11 de julio, vi los nuevos médicos de mañana, los nuevos ingenieros, los nuevos empresarios, los nuevos emprendedores, que han dicho, queremos un cambio, pero no queremos irnos. Queremos un cambio y queremos quedarnos. Yo lo veo muy, muy, lo veo libre, pero tengo mucha fe porque estamos viviendo momentos históricos con Cuba. Siento que era necesario que la juventud estuviera preparada al cambio, y lo está. Ahora mismo, si realmente ellos escucharan al pueblo, o si ellos dijeran, bueno, ¿sabes qué? Hicieran una prueba. Vamos a hacer una manifestación de patria y vida, para que veas lo que pasa. Si tan claro están que patria o muerte es la consigna que el pueblo quiere, y ellos hacen sus manifestaciones con todo bombo y platillo, que dejen hacer una pueblo de patria y vida. Digan, a ver, no vamos a, a amenazar a nadie, no vamos a golpear a nadie. El que quiera manifestarse, que se manifieste, que lo hagan. Entonces, lo que te quiero decir es que hay una juventud lista, hay una juventud preparada, con ganas de cambio, y eso no había pasado. Hay tres generaciones en Cuba. La primera de mis padres, que desgraciadamente adoctrinada, y esa para ellos ya no es útil. Tienen 60 años, 70, como el comunismo te desecha muy rápido. La generación nuestra, que todo, casi todos nos fuimos en nuestra generación. Y esta nueva, que no queréis, que quiere un cambio para Cuba. Entonces, es perfecto, porque esta no quiere irse. Esta quiere que Cuba cambie. Y es el momento que Cuba cambie, porque ellos quieren que Cuba cambie. Entonces, tenemos que ayudar todos a que ese cambio ocurra. ¿Entiendes? Y venir nosotros con la experiencia, con todo lo que hemos aprendido, ellos con todo lo que saben, e intentar entre todos crear una Cuba mejor, que se puede, porque lo que tenemos de verdad que da pena. O sea, a veces yo miro la fotografía que llegan de Cuba, de los barrios, y digo, aquí pasó un ciclón, una guerra, o sea, está totalmente deteriorada. Así que no se ha construido nada. En Cuba no se ha construido nada. Se ha desconstruido. Todo, sí, ese. Un hospital que se desbarató, quitan los escombros, es un parque. Y Cuba está llena de parques por todos lados. Y la juventud lo sabe. Y vuelvo a recargarlo a la juventud, porque ahí está el miedo del comunismo y el miedo ahora mismo de la revolución. Es que la juventud cubana se dio cuenta que lo que quieren es un cambio.
Y ahí es donde está la oportunidad que, claro, bien estás describiendo ahí. Claro. Joel, mi respeto, mi hermano. Gracias siempre. Nos hemos conocido por años.
Sí, hermano.
Y he visto tus etapas y, bueno, como hablamos ahorita de tus letras a través de las canciones de Orichas, que en doble sentido empezaron a criticar. Recuerdo ver primera vez, te presenté en Nueva York, uh-huh, como grupo, ¿no? A los Orichas. Y que había una cantidad, allá ahí había división. Había gente pro Orichas, obviamente, que estaban dentro, y había gente en contra de Orichas afuera. Y a mí me criticaron por haberlos presentado. Como que qué pena que el artista cubano tenga que sufrir eso también, ¿no? Pero qué bueno que tú estás haciendo y levantando lo que estás haciendo y levantando la voz por tanta gente que no tiene la oportunidad de hacerlo.
Bueno, yo creo que es el deber de cada cubano de aportar su granito de arena. Yo siempre digo a la gente, patria y vida es sacar patria y muerte, pero también con patria y muerte venía una cosa que es los líderes, el líder, que aparezca el líder. Yo le decía a la gente, hay que también erradicar eso. Cada cual tiene que ser líder de su propia opinión. Y yo le decía a la gente, no nos olvidemos que este país había muchos líderes afroamericanos defendiendo una causa, y hasta que una señora, Rosa Parks, no se quiso levantar de un avión, las cosas no, de una guagua, las cosas no cambiaron. Entonces, uno nunca sabe cuál es la llave que abre la libertad.
Sientes que...
Yo le decía a la gente, ¿y qué conseguiste con Biden? ¿Y qué conseguiste? Yo no te voy a conseguir nada. Todos tenemos que lograr conseguir algo. ¿Quién te dice a ti que mañana, que nos reunimos con Mallorca, aquí en la ESO, mañana va a salir a comer, uh-huh, con su mujer, y la que hace los tamales sale y dice, te tengo que decir algo, mi hijo, pa, y esa mujer le rompe el corazón, y esa mujer es la que le hace tomar la decisión que todo el mundo está esperando, y es la que estaba vendiendo los tamales, uh-huh, en Versailles. Entonces, uno nunca sabe quién es la persona que abre la puerta. Por eso a mí me encanta que en todo el mundo están los cubanos tocando puertas. Ayer me mandaron un video de un cubano en Palma, Mallorca, en el Senado o en el Congreso de Mallorca, hablando por Cuba. Un tipo que no sé ni quién es. ¡Qué bueno! Decía, yo solo soy un cubano. Yo ni soy artista. Y decía, no, brother, qué bueno. Toca, y el otro, y el del Vaticano, y la gente del Vaticano. Padre, ¿qué usted cree? Cuba está pasando por esto. O sea, brother, nunca había visto esto. Nunca.
Oye, Yotuel, dos preguntitas rápidas. Para ti, ¿qué es Cuba? ¿Y qué te hace llorar?
Hermano, para mí Cuba es vida. Para mí Cuba es casa. Es casa, es tierra. Y a mí me hace llorar, brother, sinceramente, ver las injusticias que están sufriendo los cubanos. Ver todo esto que está pasando y que está a la vista de todo el mundo, y es como si como nos quieren hacer entender como que si no existiera. Si no es por los cubanos que estamos fuera y estamos sin descansar y sin dormir, diciendo, está pasando, ya esto se hubiera olvidado. Pero no sé, tú sabes por qué no se va a olvidar, porque por primera vez todos estamos unidos a una misma bandera, que es patria y vida. Y eso, brother, el único fin es la libertad. El único.
Gracias, Yotuel.
Adiós,
mi hermano.
Muchas gracias.
Cuídate mucho. Gracias.
¡Hay represión con la juventud! ¡Cuba es de los cubanos! ¡Cuba es de los cubanos! ¡Patria y vida! ¡Patria y vida!
Gracias, Willy. And I hate to put you on the spot, but I see your guitar back there. Would you please honor us? Con un poco de Ya Viene Llegando to close out this series of podcasts, SOS Cuba, that's been so special. And Jose Diaz-Balart, thank you for being with us and all of our guests that have joined us. Willy mentioned his foundation, the Willy Chirino Foundation. I think it's important to mention his philanthropic efforts that have been recognized through, you know, not only by UNICEF, by the Department of State as well.
Willy has done so much, and so many of the things that he has been able to achieve for others, he has done so without any press. It's amazing, and it's beautiful to see. Willy, I think you could tell Enrique that the time I followed you when you went to sing to the rafters in Panama, I actually was part of your backup band. Singing, and that was the first and only time that he let me be there. When he heard my voice, right. There was a small problem.
El desafío no fue tanto que más nunca lo volviste.
True story, right?
¿Te arrepientes de haber invitado a José a cantar contigo, Willy?
Sí.
Let me tell you something. He's my dear friend. I love José. One of the great anchor men I know. Periodista excelente en todo tipo. No lo invites a cantar jamás.
Nunca. No, aprendí.
¿Sabe una cosa? And that is probably the most played version of this song ever. It's the song which José decided to do my background vocal.
Destroyed the song for him. Qué pena me dio. Más o menos. Esta vez no te canto, Willy.
Gracias. No voy a permitir que cante. Es más, le voy a apagar el micrófono, Willy. Le voy a apagar el micrófono. Para que cantes tú, hermano. Ese himno que tanto conocemos y ese sentimiento que tanto añoramos.
Gracias, Willy, por tu tiempo. Gracias, Willy.
Apenas siendo niño en la vida, mi padre me vistió de marido. Tuve que navegar 90 millas y comenzar mi vida de extranjero. Huyéndole a la voz, hostia al verde olivo, corriendo de esa absurda ideología, pues nunca quise ser aperitivo del odio, del rencor y la apatía. En la maleta traje un colibrí, un libro de Martí, un sueño y un danzón, vino en y moré de polizón, junto a los matamoros y a me traje una palmera y un bohío, y hasta Pinar del Río lo relocalicé en mi humilde lugar de alojamiento por la 12 avenida del San Luis.
Willy, thank you.
Thank you, Willy.
Gracias, hermano. Okay.
SOS Cuba is produced by Enrique Santos, Luisa Varona, Julio Ramirez, Harold Valenzuela, DJ Extreme, Wilber Mateo, Rosalia Castro, and Telemundo in partnership with iHeartRadio's My Cultura Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeart, visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.